Hey gang, your favorite host, Chris here. I just wanted to say that this episode's a little short because I asked the bros for ideas and then didn't realize they had sent me some, so I just sort of went with my own ideas, so, you know, ignoring the bros is never a good idea. Did I just say idea like 5 times? I think I did. So, since it's so short, and since one of my boys, STP, aka Sean Patchen, and I have tried doing another little project together, you know, to get his name out there, because he isn't annoying enough to everyone, I decided to put the little show we made, called the Serious Tryhard Podcast, at the end of this one. So, if you just want your OCC joy, just listen, and then shut it off. If you want to hear a little bit extra of us trying something out, and if you want to see more, you can go to tryhardnation.com. Keep listening. But anyway, enjoy the show, and thanks for downloading. Love ya. Bye. Are we
33?
Okay. Hey everybody, welcome to Off Color Cast, episode 33. That is wonderful. Hey, we're a show about EDH. We like the serious, the aggressive, and the awesome. I'm Chris. I play EDH. Imagine that. Let's say hello to our other guest hosts here tonight. This week we've got Cassidy. Why don't you say hello to the people at home, Cassidy?
Yes, thanks for having me on the show, Chris. You can check out my articles over at tcgplayer.com in the Magic section, and I'm at Right or Wrong on the Twitter. I've been trying to get more into the Twitter lately. I've never been on the show before, so this should be a nice surprise.
This week, I've also got a special treat for you. I've got our other guest, Calvin, here. Why don't you say hello to everybody?
Hello, everybody. This is Calvin. I'm also known as Captain Redstone on the internet. If this is episode 33 of All Color Cast, which means if you actually go back, you could listen to 3 episodes of Off Color Cast for 11 months if you listen to only 3 a month. And you could get the whole thing up until that point. I'm going to do the best that I can to continuously try to find ways to divide our number up so people can know how long they can actually listen to us. I'm actually waiting for the point when we reach enough hours to the point where they can't listen to us without actually going 24 hours a day for an entire week.
All right, kids. Bam. All right. Bogwitch, here we come.
Found it. Nightshade Assassin. That's your favorite madness card right there.
Yes. Of course, that's from fucking Jesus.
Like what? I never realized that they thought that ability was awesome enough to put it on another creature.
Time Spiral, you are the best block. Jesus. Wait, they didn't do that with the other ones, did they? No, I don't think.
I don't know. I've never heard of the Brine like assassin or anything.
Yeah, no, they didn't. Just the Nightshade one. Fuck, I need to get this card.
That's crazy.
Okay.
Well, well, well. If it isn't time for Chris's stupid card thing, here on Off Color.
Alright, kids, it's time for yet another stupid card thing. What do you know? This time it's a creature, so it's not an enchantment. It is still an old frame. It's from Mercadian Masks, aka one of the best sets ever. It is Bogwitch, 2 and a black for a 1/1. Bogwitch is a spell shaper. Why don't I have the card up? I just assumed that I would know everything it did.
It's a human spell shaper?
Yeah. So you can pay a black, tap it, and discard a card from your hand, add 3 black to your mana pool. Now, mask spell shapers are pretty good because all mask cards are terrible. So being able to turn a masks card into a useful spell was a pretty nifty thing that you could do there. In this case, Bogwitch turns any of the cards in your hand into a dark ritual. I like this because it's a great tempo play if you're into that sort of thing, as long as you have 3 mana and a turn. But if you want to get some dudes out quicker than your opponents are, you can definitely use Bog Witch to this end. I would recommend maybe having Madness card or something in there, something to synergize with the discard from the Spell Shaper to, you know, get more bang for your buck there. Cassidy, what do you think?
You know, it's funny because the Spell Shapers, they came out when I was playing a lot, you know, in Masks. We kind of talked about this before we started recording, I guess. Probably didn't get on the record. Are you recording? Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm okay. Not you.
Yeah, you're not me. Exactly.
No, I'm not recording.
That's fine.
I think Bog Witch is probably one of the better of the Spell Shapers. I mean, they really, really rode that out, like, throughout. I mean, like, Latula and all those guys, they're Spell Shapers, and they're like, in the next block altogether, right? So, I mean, Spell Shapers were...
They're in Prophecy, which is still part of Masks somehow.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Except it had nothing to do with the storyline thus far.
Was Prophecy, like, part of the Mercadian Mask block?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, then.
Yeah, you would have never known, because it doesn't have anything to do with it.
I thought that was the beginning of the Kamal story, the Prophecy story. Oh, well, I don't know shit. So apparently, whatever I say about this card is completely worthless. But, I mean, Dark Ritual is one of the better cards for black in an aggro format, or, like, Suicide was always pretty fun. So, you know, I can't fault it. It's basically on a stick. She does cost three, so that kind of sucks. But yeah. Besides that, it's okay.
If she was one mana, and then you were getting, like, you know, five or six mana on turn two,
mm-hmm.
She'd probably be a better play, but...
Well, you could always Dark Ritual into her on turn one.
I'm that actually leads to a bit of an off-topic question, but I don't think of Dark Ritual as a good enough card to run in EDH, and I never know if I'm wrong about something, but is that something you would ever run?
Maybe in, like, the dual format if I was really trying to hit some, like, you know, the one-on-one format, but...
Yeah.
I mean, not really in multiplayer, because it's such a bad rip, you know what I mean? Like, you just want something to do something, and it's like, here, have three mana and one card.
Have you ever run Calvin Ritual?
Nope. I don't usually run Dark Ritual in my EDH decks. Not because I don't run black or anything like that. I mean, come on, I always play, like, with black cards and stuff. But the thing is I've never really found it worth it, because it seems to me, like, by the time I actually... Like, it's the, if I needed mana on turn one, I'd rather have Sol Ring or another, like, Mana Rock. And late game, it basically just becomes pay general attacks up to three. And that's roughly it. Like, I discard this card so I can cast my general now, even though because he's already died twice. And I got the extra mana to pay for this or whatever. But even then, by late game, I usually have other, like, things in it for, like, mana production, so I don't really need it.
Oh, by the way, I see what you're doing.
Still a good card, all over.
Calvin Ritual.
So what do you think of the Bog Witch, Calvin?
Bog Witch I could actually see being kind of useful because of the fact that it's a continual effect. It's like, you know, you can actually have the option to keep discarding cards and, like, kind of get extra mana out of it over time. Because after, what, two activations, the mana cost pretty much has already paid for itself and netted you, like, what, an extra two mana, right?
Yeah, but you're also down two cards.
But you've also been down, yeah, but you'd be down two cards. But in the same token, like, if you're playing black, that extra mana could be used for other reasons. I mean, black is the color where you kind of want stuff in the graveyard anyway. Because, you know, you're going to be dredging stuff. You're going to toss your big guys in there and, like, reanimate them. Well, like, animate deads or some type of spell. Like, if you're playing black-white, you might actually use it for the damn it. Unburial Rites? Right? That's what it is? The black one from...
With flashback, you mean?
With the flashback, with white?
Yeah, there's also Dread Return that has flashback, too.
Yeah. And you got, like, Dread... Yeah. There's any, like, and then also you got, like, other things that you might want to toss in the graveyard. Like, if you end up with, like, an early Army of the Damned, you can toss that into the graveyard because, you know, hey, you're not going to be casting it at the moment because, you know, turn two, like, you top deck that thing. Oh, well, fuck it, toss it into the graveyard. And then later on, this thing actually could produce enough mana to help you be able to cast that a little bit sooner. So, like, the card discard part of it is more of the, like, it can be used to your advantage in black. There's also, like, that green-black card with the green with the black flashback that gives you the, what is it, 1/2 spiders for every creature in the graveyard or something like that?
Oh, yeah, spider spawning. Yeah, sure.
Spider spawning? Yeah, so you're, like, you know, so this like, there's plenty of ways to work around it. And then on top of that, because of the fact that it gives you 3 mana, and in order to play this thing, you already had to have 3 mana. So unless you actually use, like, Dark Ritual to get this out, you'll have 6 mana available to you, so it should be able to help you get, like, your general... you could easily get, like, a 6 mana general out on turn 4, which isn't that bad. Or if you happen to have, like, a Swamp and a Oblivion Ring, you can use those to get this. So...
Alright, so I talked about before, like, talking about cards you want to discard, like reanimation targets, and then we were looking at Madness earlier, because, you know, Madness, you get to pay the Madness cost if you're discarding it. And we found the greatest Madness card ever. And this is Nightshade Assassin. But Nightshade Assassin actually has the Nightshade Seer ability when it enters the battlefield. So you get to reveal X black cards from your hand, and if you do, target creature gets -X/-X till end of turn. But it's a 4 mana for 2/1, but its madness cost is 1 and a black. So you can discard it with Bog Witch, use the mana you've netted to cast it for its madness cost, and have the greatest ability in the game. So that's all I really have to say about Bog Witch for right now. But I just really enjoy Spell Shapers in general, so we can have a quick little discussion about them. I've just... always enjoyed, you know, being able to cast classic spells by pitching any card I have in my hand. Waterfront Bouncer, one that just unsummons, is really fun. And well, I like all the legendary ones too. Well, especially Megiddo the Lion, because he's just a dickhead to play against.
Oh yeah, Megiddo, I forgot about him. There's Joel Royale, which is a pretty sweet channeler or spell shaper. I don't know why I keep calling everything channeling lately. Yeah, I mean, this it's a cool ability if the ability is, like, worth it, you know? Like, I really definitely think that Bog Witch might be worth it now that we're talking about it more. And then Waterfront Bouncer is one of my favorite cards anyways. I mean, that's, like, it's one of the funniest blue guys ever.
Yeah, why is he, like, that doesn't look like a blue guy.
Yeah, it doesn't, well, it's supposed to be a merfolk, I guess, but...
it's a pretty big fucking merfolk.
You're right.
It's like Merberg.
Merbeck.
Merbeck.
Yeah, he is pretty fucking beefy for a 1/1, I'll tell you that.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
So huge. I guess, like, For the spell shapers to be good, it has to be something worth discarding too. And, like, a lot of them, like Balloon Peddler, if you look at that, he just gives a creature flying if you discard a card. Like, I think you could just cast, like, Flight or something, right? And draw a card or something.
I don't even want to cast Flight ever.
Right.
Now, Devout Witness, which is disenchant on a stick, can prove pretty useful depending on who you're playing against.
Yeah, I like Devout Witness. It's kind of slow, though. That's always been my experience, because it's 3 to cast and then 2 to use.
Yeah.
It's in between 2 turns, so sometimes it's, like, too little too late when White has so many good ways to get rid of it right away. But, I mean, if you're playing Reanimator, or if you just really like creatures on a stick or spells on a stick, you know, instead of spot removal, like, Devout Witness is pretty badass. So you can totally cast Resurrect. Afterwards, or Resurrection, or whatever.
Calvin, have you had to mess with Spell Shapers a lot?
When I first did start playing Magic, I used Waterfront Bouncer a lot in a deck I called the Nosy Bitch, mainly because my brother basically would never show me his cards that he would have for his deck, so I just put, like, various things in there, like Spy Network and shit, just to see everything he had available, but it never had a win condition. And he would play cards, and I'd play something like Waterfront Bouncer just so I could just bounce his creatures away so he couldn't beat me soon enough before I could actually look at his old deck. And he basically told me, like, I don't understand why you play with that deck. You always lose. So I was like, no, I have a different win condition. If I can see your entire deck before you kill me, I win.
They should have that on a card. Like, if you can name every single card in your opponent's deck, you win the game. That'd be awesome.
So let's go ahead and grade the Bog Witch. Thumbs up or thumbs down, Cassidy?
You know, for the Bog Witch, I'll give thumbs up. Not all the spell shapers will get a thumbs up, but Bog Witch is definitely one of the few that might actually be pretty good. So why not?
Calvin?
Bog Witch is a card where I personally would have to give it a thumbs down. I mean, not that it's doesn't have uses and stuff like that. I mean, it does, but for 3 mana to get a 1/1 that's basically just going to grant me 4 more mana, I'd rather use that 3 mana on something else that's not as easily killable. Because, you know, it's basically a 1/1 creature, so there's always going to be like, I get to 3 mana, and then someone happens to raft the board, and now I'm out of my Bog Witch, or something like that. But if I'm going to use 3 mana, I'd rather like invest it into like a artifact or some type of like mana producing enchantment that I know people aren't probably going to target or destroy easily. But other than that, that's basically the only reason I'm giving it like the thumbs down, because of the fact it's too much mana for a 1/1 creature in a format that pretty much too many rafts are running rampant.
Yeah. All right, so there you go, kids. If you're in black and you want more black mana, and who doesn't, maybe you give the old Bog Witch a try. So kids, this is more something I see online than anything. But you know that part in a game where you know you're going to die, but you're not dead yet, but the guy obviously has lethal on the table against you, and the best play on the best play on board would be for them to kill you, and then, you know, deal with anybody else. A lot of times online, what will happen is the person will scoop before the guy attacks. What that really does, though, is it sort of ruins the game for the other two guys that might still be playing, because that guy then didn't have to waste those resources killing you and is more than capable of just sending those to other people, or maybe they would have had to take a little bit of damage if they had to overextend a little bit to do it. You know, stuff like that. And I do see it from time to time on the table, too, which is kind of weird because you'd think people would just, you know, let themselves get killed and then go away. But have you guys ever run into this?
Yeah, I mean, most of the time, if someone's, like, bitch scooping like that, the rest of the table's dead, too. You know what I mean? But, I mean, yeah, sometimes people are dicks. you know what I mean? I don't know. I think what I see mostly is people that are spitefully scooping, you know, or, we talked about it on the Commander Cast a long time ago, Scoopy McGee, you know, someone that scoops for no reason and then wants to come back into the game and shit. So, I mean, there's a lot of different things that can be obnoxious when it comes to scooping, but I haven't come across that too much where it's just like, you know, even if the person does bitch scoop too, it'd be like everyone just agrees that those resources had to be spent that way or something. I don't know.
That's not a bad idea, because like the guy scooped, but yeah, I mean, you obviously needed to be able to kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
What I actually see worse is there's a bitch scoop, and I stole this from the Mana Pool. I forget what episode, but they were talking about bitch scoops, and the guy who scoops when like you have like one of their you've mind controlled one of their creatures that you're using to hold the biggest threat on the board at bay, and that guy scoops and you lose that.
I was actually just thinking like that has happened a lot too, like where just like the legality of it, almost like does what's in the rules, does this card stay with me, or you know, like it's kind of nebulous the rules when it comes to things like that. So that happens a lot more actually than what we were talking about originally, mostly. Yeah. Just like it's not even like a bitchly thing, because it doesn't even have to scoop, that player might just die, right, and then like what happens to that creature. But if it's a scoop to make it so someone else doesn't lose because of that, not even himself, like that'd be the bitchly as possible.
So actually that brings up a good point, and we hate the rules anyway. The rules state that, you know, when a player dies, any permanent that he owns goes away.
Goes with him.
I'm fine with people keeping, I mean, if I don't have to leave, I would be fine with talking with the table and, you know, beforehand maybe, and just saying, hey, that's a gay rule. It's not like I controlled the thing when I died. I just owned it. Let's just agree that these things can stay permanents on the table.
Yeah.
Unless you gotta leave, and then of course it's like, well, man, I need my cards.
Yeah. Actually, that brings up an interesting question I want to ask. What happens if your creature dies and it's under somebody's mimic back, and then you die? Does the mimic back still make token copies of that creature?
Yeah, kind of a similar thing, where does the imprint stick around even though that guy's gone? I mean, like, technically when it comes to the mimic bat, you don't actually need to physically control anything, because imprint is like, it's like an abstract, you know what I mean? It's in your exile zone anyways, technically, so, like, that might not be as much of an issue, but I could see people being like, no, you can't have it underneath the mimic bat anymore, and you're like, what?
Mimic bat has caused more problems than I think it's been worth.
But I would say that, like, because after thinking about it, I'd be like, well, I don't think that the Mimic Bat would be able to steal and print that card, because basically Mimic Bat says that when another card goes to the graveyard, you pretty much have the option to switch them out. But you have to take the exiled card and put it in its owner's graveyard. But if the owner's dead and it's gone, the card can't come out and go back into the graveyard. So it should just kind of, like, disappear from that, right? It doesn't make a difference. It's
yeah.
Like back to what we were discussing. Like, this isn't the Mimic Bat show.
Come on down, Mr. Mimic Bat.
The cards with imprint on them that do see play in EDH, I think, are some of the most obnoxious cards on Earth. I don't know. I'm sick of seeing fucking duplicate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things where, like, green needs better removal. Mono white. I mean, you could basically play it in any deck and it's good. So, yeah. It's one of those auto includes that you don't like, and I understand. Yeah.
It is 6 mana, but 6 mana is pretty easy to hit for a colorless spell.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just funny that it's like a robot assassin coming to kill your shit.
Terminator.
Then there's Animar, who's just like, yo, what's up? Man, Animar. More like Manamar.
Manamar. I just realized Phyrexian Tyranny sucks. I have to take it out of this deck.
What? I have trouble believing that.
Oh, shit. What? It does. Because it's every player. I was thinking that it was just opponents. Because I didn't read it
very well. Oh, Phyrexian Tyranny had an overload on it?
If that was red-black, I'd play it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play it in Grixis.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, I mean, I don't have Consecrated Sphinx in here. Oh, I guess I do, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to draw too many goddamn cards playing blue.
I don't know if I have a Grixis deck now that I think about it. I don't like any of the generals.
Yeah, that's pretty much the big issue. This is a discard deck, though, so you can play like a few of the different ones. Like, Nicol Bolas is cool, and if you have that one whore bitch, you could use her, but she's kind of hard to get around.
Garza's Ol?
No, is Garza's Ol? No, she's 7. She's a 7 drop. I'm talking about Gwendolyn DeCorshi.
Oh, you know, fuck
she's
that. Like,
she's pretty good if you have her, though. I mean,
is Garza's Ol even Grixis? I just decided she was.
I think she is, yeah. Like, that's the thing. They're all, like, super. They're all, like, so high on the curve. Like, there's not any, like, cheap Animar-type ones. I was just talking with Patchin about that the other day. But I don't know if people have ever seen or heard the Blizzard Spectre, but holy shit, this thing is fucking awesome. I had it out with Orc Devotion, where whenever someone returns a card to their hand, that player discards a card. He's just, like, wrecking face. It was amazing.
Okay, so as you guys have been able to tell, we sort of are letting me pick topics because we're sort of lost.
Yeah, that's cool.
Blizzard Spectre looks sweet, though. It's like, it's like a bad older dragon.
Yeah, it is kind of. I mean, this whole deck is like specters. Like, that's kind of the thing. Like, it's got all of them almost, plus the shockers.
What?
The shocker? Have you ever seen the shocker?
Yes.
The barb shocker. It's just like, I can't not laugh when I see that card. Oh God, that would hurt. Give me a barb shocker. Fuck that.
Yeah. Barb shocker's pretty. I like it. I like the Time Spiral cards that are just like, we're going to take something obviously awesome and make a new version of it. Oh, like, yeah. Nightshade Assassin.
Yeah, Time Spiral was cool. I'm surprised that it's like one of the least selling. Like, that shit didn't get opened at all, right?
Well, didn't it come out like after Kamigawa?
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Magic was just like, eh, no one gives a shit.
Yeah.
Okay, kids, as we actually know, this came out after Ravnica and Cold Snap. Yeah, let's go with that.
That would explain it, actually. I need to find one more card then, because I took out that fucking card. What's a good Grixis card, guys?
Yeah.
I'll just put Gwendolyn in.
Blood Tyrant.
Yeah, the Vampire.
Oh, yeah, that guy's cool. I like the one that makes it so whenever your opponent, like, loses a permanent, it, you get it unless they pay 3 life. I can't remember what that one's called, though. It's pretty sweet. Oh, I have it in this deck.
Well, that wouldn't be, it that betrays because you don't have to pay for it. You just get it.
It's Grixis, too.
Are you running Elder Mastery?
Hell yeah, that card's awesome. I'm talking about Prince of Thralls. It's a pretty sweet creature.
Are you running Elemental Augury?
Would you
No, actually I'm not. Let me see.
It's a pretty stupid card.
Whenever a permanent opponent controls is put into a creature.
Oh, I think I might. That's just awesome. I remember this card.
It's like, oh, you topped? Here, let me spend 3 mana. Let's re-top this.
That's pretty funny. It's terrible, but it's hilarious. Yeah. I don't know. That might fit into that deck. Let me see. It has a lot of those the windfall and stuff effects. I don't know
why, but I'm looking at Prince of Thrall, and the first thing that comes to my mind is that he needs a name and he needs to be legendary.
Yeah.
And that mana cost just looks too fucking high for you not to be a legend. And how the hell are you gonna be a prince? Like, what, are they, like, more than, like, one Prince of the Thralls?
I think Sidraxis Spectre should be a freaking legend, so we could have a fun Grixis deck to play.
All right, kids.
wait, what were we talking about again?
Exactly.
bitch.
Derailed. Yeah, so... If you guys have your own little rules about scooping like that, why don't you email the show at offcolorcast@gmail.com?
Okay.
Just one more.
Interesting question. You ask. Like, I'm so, like, Cass, you realize that he just did, like, the entire, like, bitch scoop thing and didn't even, like, go to me to ask me my opinion about the bitch scoop thing?
I thought we did.
No. It was him and you, and then so randomly talking about cards and shit. And next thing I know, like, all right, well, this segment's done.
All right. Well, what do you think, Calvin?
I don't have a single fucking opinion.
Yeah, asshole.
He doesn't give a shit.
Okay.
You see, at my victory and all against all odds. That means I can command and demand an X-Divine Vision title shot!
So, I was talking to some Twitter bros the other day, and this is a question I've had, because I really feel like enchantments run rampant through games in most of the games that I play. And especially if I'm in green, I'm not adverse to this. I like running enchantment sweepers probably more than I do creature sweepers, because destroying all enchantments is more fun. But when I'm talking to some of the people, you know, out there, they tend to want their enchantment, if it's something that's destroying enchantments, they want it tacked onto something else as well, like a Chroma's Vengeance or a Disc or something like that. Like, just blowing up the enchantments does not seem good enough for most people. So I'm just going to open the floor up here and see what you guys think.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead, Calvin, since you got so rudely passed over last time with nothing to say.
I play enchantment sweepers. I personally like using them just because of the fact that I rarely play enchantments. Except for, you know, the one or two odd in enchantments here and there. Like, maybe, like, if I'm playing a tokens deck, yeah, this is going to be a doubling season in Parallel Lives, or if I'm playing like a prisons deck, there's going to be like a ghosted prison and, you know, like whatever. But most of my decks, usually I don't play enchantments. I usually don't waste time with them. I usually spend most of my time on creatures and artifacts. And so I usually have no problem playing like things like Tranquility and what's the Osteria Command?
Yeah, or the new Tranquility.
There's
the one that's better.
Yeah, because it's two instead of natural.
No, I forgot what that one. I know what you're talking. I know what you're talking about. I've seen it. I've got one floating around somewhere. I just never got a chance of taking it out of my deck for and replacing Tranquility with that.
Okay, well, I'm on the Gatherer, sir, or the MTGO doing stuff anyway, so I'll check it real quick.
Destroy all enchantments.
Back to nature. There we go. It's right there.
Yeah, they're just like Tranquility. Too bad.
Oh.
Tranquility does kind of suck. I mean, we're talking about, whether or not we think it's good, but at the same time, Tranquility was, it's like the staple. It's the disenchant of the entire cycle, but it's not really the best of them. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I don't really like them very much, the Tranquility effects. I think it's not that I play a lot of enchantments all the time. It's just like if I bother to play enchantments, it's usually because I want them to stay in play for a while, and that's why they're in there. Mm-hmm. You know, I might even choose an enchantment over a creature that does the same thing if I think that the enchantments survive longer. So, like, just trying to swipe everyone's enchantments at once was never something I liked. I usually like to play, like, well, Devout Witness is a good counterexample of it because she's a repeatable effect that's, like, targeted, you know? Or just playing like Aura Silence. I like that card a lot. So I like Pinpoint removal better because, mm-hmm. Like Calvin said, like he doesn't play a lot of enchantments and most people don't, except for like the few that they like. So usually Tranquility might even be overkill because it's not like you're going to fight against too many enchantment only decks, even though I play against a Feldegrift deck that is based on enchantments and stuff. So, I mean, there is some value in that, but at the same time, most of the time, there's not really, like, Tranquility is not going to get rid of a ton of cards.
So, how's about this then, Cassie? Would you run Cleansing Meditation over your one spot removal enchantment killer? Basically, it's Tranquility for white. It's like 1-2 white, and it has, like, threshold where you get all your enchantments back to the battlefield.
Well, see, that'll. I guess it'll be all right because you could maybe double trigger your Oblivion Ring if you want to kill something else with it and stuff. But, that card's okay. I mean, I probably would use a Serene Grove, right? Destroy all other enchantments. The enchantment itself that kills everything else. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, I've actually got a. There's two green cards. One of them destroys all non-aura enchantments, and one of them destroys all auras. I care. Tranquil Domain is the one that destroys all non-aura enchantments. So if you're in Ural, I could definitely see slotting up this just to keep, you know, to get rid of, like, any of the stupid, like, propagandas or any of the other dumb enchantments that are running out there, keeping your Ural from being able to attack a guy.
And also, those cards were where they came up with local and global enchantments, too. Like, it didn't last, like, at all. So, I bet a lot of people look at those cards these days and be like, what the fuck is this? Does global enchantment still exist? What would I be destroying?
and it's different from an enchant world.
Because you can only have one enchant world in play, right? Yeah,
global enchantments were just non-auras.
Yeah.
That was actually, like, when I first came back and they called creature enchantments auras, I thought it was the dumbest thing on Earth. But they seem to have made it work for themselves.
Well, I guess it's a shorter word, you know what I mean? Like, and it's a good word for it, and then, whatever. I agree, it was like, I think you need to give these soldier tokens humans before we start worrying about renaming enchant creatures.
Cass, you play a lot of like green, so you usually have things with like high mana costs on it, right?
I've been cutting back more and more, but Omnath can definitely get away with like playing a Terracidon really fast and stuff. Yeah.
So would you ever use like a Spring Cleaning?
Let me see.
It's a instant destroy target enchantment and then clash with an opponent, and if you win, destroy all enchantments your opponent's control.
clashing.
Oh.
What are you doing to me?
That might be all right. There's actually a pretty cool one from I think, Guild Pact called Primeval Light.
Don't be hating on Clash, Chris. Clash is coming back in Gatecrash.
Man, I better first. I hate Clash.
It's a free scry, I guess. But this Primeval Light from Dissension, which destroys all enchantment target players control, or target player controls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the card I would use it more than anything, because, like, you're only going to have to really worry about destroying all someone's enchantments if they're playing, like, way too many of them anyways. So then it's just, like, then no one else is sad. You know, it's like, oh, you just killed the guy with Decree of Silence. Or not Decree of Silence, that doesn't make sense. But, you know, you know, he's got counterbalance in play, and he's got exploration and all this shit. So it's like, everyone's like, yay, Primeval Light. So, yeah, that's the card I would use, if you're wondering what I would use. Primeval Light is one of the cards I'd actually use.
Yeah, it looks like I'm just going through my feed, and most people are saying that if they're going to run an enchantment sweeper, the first one they're going to pick up is Austere Command. Because
yeah.
It's got, because they don't just want an enchantment sweeper. It's got to be able to do something else too.
Right, and then that way, if you're playing against a lot of people that aren't playing enchantments, it's not a totally dead card. That was actually the first card I thought of when you mentioned it. But then it's like, well, that's also like the best sweeper all around, anyway. It's when you think about it. So,
Return to Dust is a pretty nifty card too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's more pinpoint.
Yeah, it's definitely pinpoint, but I was just like, they were mentioning that they would rather run Eternatus because if there's usually not going to be more than two enchantments really messing up the game.
Oh, yeah. I run a Return to Dust in my white decks, and it's pretty cool because you can get with Sunforger too during your turn. So it's like, oh, look at all this extra advantage I get from Sunforger.
Stupid Sunforger. I mean, Red, I don't even know. Like, how much would Boros get played if Sunforger didn't exist?
Probably a lot less, because there's not a lot of reason to. Like, there's cool stuff you can do, but Sunforger is the reason to be like, oh, well, I don't want to take the red out of my deck because of Sunforger.
Yeah, and, I mean, the most fun things to do in red and white are usually spells anyway.
Yeah.
Or at least, you know, those are the most useful things.
I'd still play Boros without Sunforger.
Oh, yeah, I would too.
Right.
But it'd free up a lot of cards when you take out the Sunforger package.
Yeah, maybe though. I mean, most of the cards I get with Sunforger I play anyways, like swords and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
since we are talking Boros, I'm gonna go a little off topic real quick. Do either one of you have the Duels of the Planeswalker thing?
The new one?
Or like, yeah.
No.
What, the M13?
Nope.
Okay. You don't have the Xbox or the PlayStation, do you?
No, my Wii's broken, so I'm down to I'm down to playing the SNES emulator on my laptop.
Like in a week from now, Cassie's going to be down to play with himself.
Week
I got
from
the
now.
First one, and then I stopped.
Well, I picked up the I've got M13 for the Xbox 360, and I've been playing around with it. And they've actually recently they did the 5 guilds from Return to Ravnica.
Oh, cool.
And the thing is, they did this weird thing where they made decks for them without using the old mechanics and not using the new mechanics, but still tried to use cards from Ravnica to kind of make a deck that felt like that guild.
So they didn't have Overload in there, but they had one of the other?
No, just like, no. No, it's like they didn't have any of the new cards either.
Oh, okay.
It's like this. There's no cards from Return from Ravnica. They just used the guilds, and Golgari and.
Oh, okay.
And you know them. Those 5 things that we were talking about.
So I bet you Watch Wolf is in the Selesnya one.
I don't know. I didn't even get a chance to look into the Selesnya one yet, because I was because the thing is, by the time I got around to purchasing this, they have already added 2 additional decks for it. Because it's the 5 guilds from Ravnica, and then they added a red-white deck and a Simic deck, blue-green. So as soon as I bought the 5 ones and I bought the 2 additional decks, I realized I had a red-white deck and I just started playing with it.
Red-white planeswalker that they use? Well, not planeswalker, but the guy who's in charge of the deck.
It's a angel from Return. It's an angel from Ravnica, from original Ravnica.
Oh,
It's black.
Razzle.
The one where, yeah. Not the legendary one. It's like the one where if it's in the graveyard, you gain life for it, but it has that phoenix ability where you can bring it back to your hand or the battlefield or something like that. It was like triple the mana or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's Firebane something.
Firebane Angel, yeah. I think Firebane sounds right.
Yeah, Firebane Angel.
Yeah.
It's a 4/3 flying first strike. And at the beginning of your upkeep, if it's in your graveyard, you gain one life. And then you can pay like double its mana cost and basically bring it to the graveyard to the battlefield.
Well, that's at least it does that. I'm surprised it doesn't just put it in your hand.
Well, it's good. It's good because you can get to the battlefield, but you got to pay like 6 red, red, white, white to get a 4/3 flying first striker, and it doesn't even have haste.
Yeah, it's almost like playing her again from the command zone.
And I was like, no, but the thing is, she's not even a legend.
It's I know.
And I was like,
it's just funny the way, like, it's like whenever you're spending that much mana on a creature in EDH, it's always because it's your general. So, like, that's just the first thing. Like, 6 colorless, so I guess I would do that with Gisela after she dies once. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but Gisela's worth it.
Yeah, she is. She's worth it.
Okay. Yeah,
the thing that got to me was the red-white deck. Like, the 5 decks where they specifically said these are, like, the decks, the guilds from Return of Ravnica, because they gave you Celestia and Golgari and this and that third, and they intentionally, like, avoided using Dredge and Scavenge and Overlord and basically anything that had the guild's mechanic. So I picked up the red-white deck expecting it to be, like, you know, a nice, fun red-white Boros deck. And the first card that I see in my hand is a fucking Radiate card. And I'm like...
Radiance?
I'm like,
they've kept the best mechanic.
Yeah. They're like, no one will even care.
This actually, that's another... That brings up, the Radiance Enchantment Sweeper can be good. The one where it blows up an enchantment and all other enchantments that share a color with it.
Oh, that sounds pretty good, actually. Is that red-white or just white?
Gotta look it up. Because I forget.
But I was playing against Selesnya when I actually had pulled it, and I kept and all my creatures were red white creatures. So, and all the Selesnya tokens that I kept seeing were white this and white soldier that and whatever. So if I ever targeted any of my things, it would like untap my guys and their guys and pump their guys and give their guys +2/+0. Or if I tried to kill their guys for X damage, I would do that much damage to my guys. And the damn deck doesn't have any, like, fucking, like, equipment. So it's not like I can pump any of my dudes and make them survive. The only pumps are, like, creatures that, like, have, like, abilities. Or, like, when they come in, other creatures you control get +0/+1 or some shit. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, the Radiance spell is Leave No Trace. It's 1 and a white in an instant. Destroy target enchantment and each other enchantment that shares a color with it.
Never seen that card before. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a common. That's, I mean, when you have to go through like 20 years of Magic cards, usually you filter to the rares.
Also, you guys explained Radiance to me, and I'm like, I'm never gonna look at any of these cards.
Yeah,
so. I've never even looked it up. Usually, I read pretty much every card on the info that I can. So, yeah. I just have never looked up Radiance, I guess, or Enchantment Killers even.
All right, kids. So, if you like sweeping enchantments, why don't you email the show at offcolorcast@gmail.com?
Yeah.
Man, this was a strong episode.
I'm sure Gudongs will tell us how much he liked it.
Gudongs liked this one. He even liked the section where we talked about where we made up new Ravnica mechanics.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah. And you're like, it was the worst.
Yo, I just don't think we design games very well.
I try, okay. Yeah.
But I mean, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, if I was going to make one, I'd end up having to, like, do Heartless Samuel Jackson and actually have a picture of it on it, of Samuel holding a gun on it, and the flavor text would be, what does Guapa Hazid look like?
All right, let's finish this. Kids, you survived episode 33 of Off Color Cast. You know, it's probably the best episode I've ever recorded. I can tell that since the call has been an hour long, this is probably going to clock in at a solid 40 minutes.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, you can hit me up. I'm Chris, @ChristianRenault on Twitter. or email the show at offcolorcast@gmail.com. Calvin then transcribes these emails into Braille and mails them to me. Cassidy, why don't you say goodbye?
True story. Braille emails are the wave of the future. Thanks for listening to the episode. It was a blast being a guest host. you can check out the articles on TCG Player in the Magic section. I'm sure you're not sick of hearing of that because this is my first time on the show. Is that joke getting old? I don't know. It seems like I'm a guest host half these episodes lately. I'm right or wrong on the Twitter. You can Facebook me, leave comments. Oh, and also I did end up writing an introduction to my dumb Dungeons and Dragons thing, and I put it up on my website, which makes the first post in almost like 4, 5, 6, 7 months or something.
I feel like it's been a year.
It's been a long ass time, so that's up there. I'm going to post more probably coming up next week. I want to do a regular thing of it. It's probably a really stupid idea that no one cares about, but I mean, whatever. Done.
All right, Calvin, take us on home.
Hey, everybody. This is Calvin, Captain Red Zone on the internet. Looking for me, CaptainRedZone@gmail.com. Or you can go to Twitter, @CaptainRedZone. You can catch us on the Off Color Cast Facebook group. Let's see. Don't fuck around and waste time trying to find us on Google Plus. We're there, but it's just, like, pointless. But like, you'd be better off looking for the Off Color Cast MySpace page. Let's see. Like, yeah, you can always send do comments on offcolorcast.com on the show if you like what you like. If you don't, you can always send us an email, offcolorcast@gmail.com. I don't think you should probably waste time going over to Cassidy's site for the You Can't Handle the NAS, because chances are, like, after I'm done with this episode, I'll probably just go over there and steal the article from her and post it on our site any fucking way.
Yeah. Whatever.
Whatever.
Cool. That works.
I guess that's roughly about it. That's everything.
Yep.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah. Thanks good for times. Listening. Rock over London. Yeah. Rock over in Chicago. Something.
Oh, I wanted to mention too. We definitely felt the sting of Sandy because the other day we had like really nice weather and a little bit of rain. So
whatever.
We're feeling it too.
Yo, it was like 60 degrees yesterday, and it was like fucking 30 degrees today.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck happened, but it needs to fucking stop.
Like, I went to work yesterday with a fucking pea coat on. It was like 70 degrees here. But the thing is, when the winter comes around, I usually have my pea coat out anyway, and I just...
You have those puffy gangster jackets.
Yeah, does Rockaware make pea coats? Yeah, does
Rockaware make pea coats? Is it a Sean John pea coat?
It's a Sean John pea coat.
With like sequins like, and fur like and
fucking,
shit.
A fucking boo boo peacoat.
Alright, I'm going to that. You kids have a good old night.
Yeah.
Alright, well, you go ahead and head to sleep. I'm going to go ahead and actually finally crash and probably try to see if I can get this, whatchamacallit up tomorrow.
Yeah. And.
Because I didn't even get a chance to do the show notes this weekend for the last one.
That's fine.
No, it's like I've been doing inventory all week. Yeah. And. It's like, when you guys sent the email, my mind was like, oh, well, don't send the email, and I'll come back and check it when I get a chance to. Never got around looking at it. And I looked into it, like, all I saw was two things. Chris saying, what are we doing? And Cass saying, I had this idea, but I forgot.
Jesus!
And that's my phone.
You're gonna die!
Oh, by the way. That came out perfectly because... Yeah. Recorded on his phone.
Dennis?
Okay, I'm getting out of here now. Okay, fine, you talk to fucking Dennis.
Yeah, alright. See you guys later.
Okay, guys, there you go. Like I said before, now we're going to go into Sean's episode of the Super Tryhard Podcast, or Serious Tryhard Podcast. One thing I did want to mention is my boys, Whiskey Worship and whatnot, over at MTGO Academy, have started up a new podcast for 100 Card Singleton. I know it's not EDH, but it's sort of EDH-like, and if you're a super serious dude, maybe playing one-on-one 100 Card Singleton against somebody else with 20 life is something that you're interested in. So they've started the Defibrillator podcast because they're starting 100 Card Singleton player run events on MTGO. So if that's something you want to check out, go to mtgoacademy.com.
you should be able to find the rest there, because it's kind of weird. So just search the 100 card singleton tag and you'll be able to get to it. But yeah, I always love helping other people out, and player run events on MTGO are fun, and all the wacky ass formats they have on there are double fun, and you can still run your Hermit Druid deck. All right. And here we come. Here comes the Serious Try Hard podcast. Here we are again. It's time to leave the no-win zone.
Because it creates a, you know, so that you're fighting on your own terms. Like, if you were going to compete with Tiger Woods in anything, you don't want to compete with them, like, playing golf or banging waitresses in the Midwest.
Welcome to the Serious Try Hard podcast, given to us by the only guy trying to make us better, Sean Patchett.
Well, let's just be honest. If you can't win within the first three turns, what the hell are you doing?
The only guy trying to get us from try hard to try harder.
I just like to slap it down on the table, look into my friend's eyes, and be like, get ready. This is going to sting a bit.
And here is your host, still dripping from his swim in the knowledge pool, Sean Patchett.
All right. Hello, everybody. Good evening, good night, good morning, whenever you're listening to this. I think today I'd like to talk a little bit about Voltron. First off, let's talk about why the fuck are we calling it a Voltron strategy in Commander. If you guys don't know what Voltron is, go listen to a different cast. This one's a serious cast. Voltron, if you watch the show, was these five kind of Asian tigers that all jumped together, created a giant beast, and just kicked ass for whatever they fought. Yet a Voltron strategy is a guy picking up a sword. So I don't know.
I think those were lions in the Voltron. I think that was lions.
So in Commander, somebody picks up a sword and just charges ahead, charges straight forward at their opponent. He's not made of little people. It's not like a bunch of Smurfs got together, joined, and became the Voltron Smurf and attacked or anything like that. So I don't know why we're using this term, but it is the term everyone is using. So there's no reason for coming up with a better term like Mega Man or just fucking general damage decks. It doesn't always have to be cute. But we'll go into this. It's one of the best ways to go about an aggro strategy, which isn't really saying much. Aggro strategies in Commander are the redheaded stepchild, the retarded kid of the Commander family. And obviously what you're trying to do is get to 21 damage, because 40 damage is a lot. And it also requires math, which a lot of Commander players are either too lazy or just really don't want to do. Now, they go about it two ways. You go about it by either getting a bunch of equipment, attaching it to your big man there, or you enchant him with a bunch of, obviously, enchantments. We've all seen these decks. If you haven't, you'll see them sooner or later. The three most famous ones, of course, are Xur, the old crazy folk, Ural, the dick, and Rafik, the token kind of human guy that goes about these. All are very effective, and they're very effective because they only take one or two swings to actually kill somebody. And if you're wondering, when you see these, like, why would somebody do that? If you're going to play a game, why would you base it around one card if you had a 99-card deck? And basically, it's because you want to just flop it out on the table, look your friends right in the eyes, and just be like, yeah, it's going to sting a little bit. So if you're looking at who to build a Voltron deck around, color is very important. I know we're trained in today's society to ignore color, but this is not the place to do it. If you're going to build a Voltron deck, there's one color you have to include in all of them, and it is white.
Well, that's enough rallying for this afternoon, members. Let's take a hot shower.
Hot shower!
There is not
shower.
A good Voltron deck that doesn't play white. If you think otherwise, then you know what? Go shut up. I hope you get radioactive crabs. White is the color to play for Voltron. The reason is that you're based around artifacts and enchantments, and guess who can search those out? Oh, yeah, all the aura search, all the equipment search, all the good stuff, you know, the stuff that doesn't cost six or more mana, is based around the white decks. So if you want to get that stuff and you actually want to be good about it, you're going to have to throw that in there. The other reason why white plays Voltron more than anything else is because Voltron's kind of a, shooting your load real early on, you know, the first-time high school student strategy for getting things done. And one of the ways you protect that is by playing land destruction or any sort of mana denial. And white has the best versions of doing that. It has its, you know, Winter Orb on a stick, all the Geddon effects, And you know what? If you're playing one creature and you only have to replay one creature, the Wrath of Gods don't help you, don't hurt you too much either. The other two colors that are mandatory, you can choose between them, but you should have one or both in your deck, is green and black. And this is because, well, you know what? I've heard a lot of people just bitching and moaning about the Tuck rule. And generally, that's because you based your entire deck around a commander, but then forgot to put a way to find the commander if it got tucked. Well, green and black make it real, real easy for you to find your tucked commander. And so if you go ahead and you look at those three traditional A-hole commanders, you'll notice all of them have either green or black. And that's because when you tuck them, they're just going to spend one mana, one spell, get their commander right back. And not only are they only spending a little bit of mana and a little bit of effort to get their commander back, those are also good spells. Like, if you're playing Vampiric Tutor, if you're playing Court of Calling, Green Sun Zenith, etc., etc., those are good even if you don't need to go find your commander. So, yeah, go ahead, play those. So remember when you're building these decks, white and then either green or black. And basically from there, you can almost play anything else. The only other important thing that you're looking for is a commander that has the ability to kill somebody in 1, 2, 3 swings. If it's going to take you 5 or 6 swings to kill somebody with your commander, you're not playing a Voltron deck. You're just playing a bad aggro deck. You could have done that a lot easier with a lot of other creatures in the game. I don't know why you chose that particular commander, but go ahead and chase another theme. You're not playing Voltron. You're not going to win with your commander damage.
Maybe we would just call those like a GoBot deck or something.
Yeah, or like a Christian or no special. So... yeah, those ones, you can call them whatever you want, because I'm not going to be playing them. I guess, yeah, just learn to play your Voltron deck a little better. Now, when you're building these decks, really the only two things you have to worry about are people preventing you from attacking and your commander getting killed over and over again. And basically, the ways you protect this are very easy. All the Voltron decks have them. Uriel has it built in, and that's giving your commander Hexproof or Shroud. Stops all of that. So you really don't care at that point. Once you have Lightning Greaves equipped, or they just can't attack, then Maze of Ith, Path to Exile, all those kind of things just kind of go away magically. The other things that are going to stop you are things like Moat and Snaring Bridge, etc. And so a lot of these are going to play just little bits of spot removal. Until they can get their guy protected up to stop you from either comboing off or to stop that. Overall, the strategy is actually very good. It's relatively easy to hate out, so I would always recommend having that not be the only creature in your deck. But you know what? If you're going to play aggro and you want to be competitive, follow those rules. So you want white, you want black or green, you want a commander that can easily kill in 1 to 3 swings as you go along. You're going to want to be able to search out all of your special pumps, because you're going to want specific ones for this, and you're going to want to give it protection from spot removal. And then, you know what? You're going to be doing all right.
What's that? Giving up on winning? Well, we understand that not everyone can do it. I mean, those with low IQs, those who don't know how, everything like that. So if you're one of those many people and not one of the elite, why not give these other two EDH shows a try, offcolorcast.com or commandercast.com? Maybe after you've learned a little bit, maybe you'll be back, and maybe you'll finally be ready.
Moving on to the next topic. The next thing we're going to talk about is something that I just find so exciting. It's just more fun than a truckload of dead babies. And what I'm talking about here is Mana Denial. Again, this is something that's hated out inside of the Commander community. For whatever reason, people don't like it when you destroy all their lands or stop them from tapping lands for mana. But you know what? If we're playing for a while and you haven't been able to stop me by the time I can cast an Armageddon, you don't deserve those lands. Those don't belong to you anymore. You know, you didn't do that on your own. So when one of these gets cast, if you haven't made an impact to the board in the early turns and then one of these sweeps you out, it's because you built a bad deck that doesn't do anything in the first three turns. And that's fine if everybody's playing a bad deck, but if I'm playing a good deck, don't blame me for playing a good deck. Mana Denial is one of the strongest things you can do in a multiplayer setting. You can try to play all the counter spells you want. You can try to play all the Wrath of Gods you want. But if you really want to stop people from stopping you from winning, then you got to sweep the leg, Johnny. You gotta go for it. You go for the win. And if you're playing with a group of friends, it's a game. They're still going to have fun, and it doesn't matter what you're doing. If you're doing a good play, good friends know it's a good play, and they're not going to get angry at you for it. So, in any case, Mana Denial is a main part of your deck. If you're wondering why you would do this, it's if you like to play out your hand quickly. If you like to play all seven cards in your hand and not stare at the shiny foils like a beaver, then this is a good thing to do. You can play out your hand, and then you can play your sweeper, and you can maintain your board position. I mean, really the reason for that is that a lot of people keep resources in their hand, assuming that with the mana available, they can play them. Control players do this especially. Seven cards in hand for them is more important than having a board position. And so when you sweep the lands out from underneath them, and you sweep that mana advantage out from underneath them, you're removing their line of play. One of the other things that this does that's actually fun, and it's fun for everyone as well as good, or fun for people that like to have fun in Magic and not just tell you what to do, is that when you're playing Mana Denial, you end up making permanence a lot more important. You want to have things on the board whenever you can. Generally, you don't want to play everything out because it can get torn away. But in the very first stages, the very early stages of a game, you know, when you're before the 4-6 mana where the sweepers come in, you get to keep your permanence. You get to play with things, and it ends up being about combat tricks, trading, spot removal, and all sorts of fun things you get to do in, say, like Limited or other games that Commander actually does kind of sweep under the carpet. Those low mana creatures generally don't do anything. And when you play to take out mana and you play so that people don't get to use those massive amounts of mana when they're not just casting Tooth and Nail all willy-nilly, you actually get to have these games that are fun, and they're about creatures, and they're about permanence, and they're not about just who's drawing the right things at the right time.
Sounds like you're making your permanence more permanent.
Yeah, it's about tactics, and one of the tactics of this as well is in your group, if ramp is getting very prevalent, then a Mana Denial strategy is going to take out the ramp. When you look at the most popular decks, things like Maelstrom Wanderer, very, very popular. Primeval Titan was very popular. And you know what? Primeval Titan wouldn't have needed to be panned if there wasn't this stigma around mass land destruction. So somebody plays a Primeval Titan, grabs four lands from their deck, and you destroy all their lands. Yeah, Primeval Titan's going to go get more lands, but I'm betting they grab their good ones first. And so when those get taken away, it's a big deal. It also actually reverses the effect of a Primeval Titan more than just copying or destroying one does. So, and of course, the last thing it is a lot of people are against combos. I'm obviously not, because I like to win games. But using an Armageddon and taking away all the mana is a way to end those just hour and hour long games that feel like they're locked out. When people get shut down again to, you know, the zero or one mana, then games actually end. It's not intuitive. You think that if you reset the game late on, then it would go on longer. But no, really, if people set up these stagnant positions where they have enough mana to either counter or deal with everything, that's going to make it go on forever. Starting over when you've removed a bunch of your good cards from the deck should make things go by a bit quicker, especially because you haven't been holding on to your cheap cards. You've been holding on to your expensive cards. Now, going into what kind of cards make up these kind of strategies, the most common, the ones everyone's are used to hearing when you're talking about mass land destruction and Mana Denial, are obviously things like Armageddon and Boom Bust and Planar Cleansing, things that just plain out sweep lands. And that is one way of doing things. It's a little harder to figure out when to use them than other strategies, but it is the most common way people think of. The next most common way is one of the most effective ways, and that's the Winter Orb and Static Orb, or Hikori way of doing things, where you play one of these, and then people really have to think about what they're going to do with their mana. And this is one that just adds a level of tactics to Commander that I love, because most people, well, just aren't as smart as I am. And so this gives me a huge advantage in a game, and if you've been playing for a long time and you know your deck, it gives you a huge advantage as well. When you know exactly what you want to do and other people have to make a lot of decisions, they're going to make the wrong decisions more than you will. And so this is going to give you an advantage, especially if your deck is built to play with these in play. And by that I mean you either have non-land ramp in your deck. So if you're playing with artifacts or you're playing with creature acceleration, then Winter Orb's not going to do anything to you, or almost nothing to you, while somebody who's playing the traditional green ramp, it's going to cripple them. And then Static Orb, if you've built around it, you're going to have your lands be something like Gaia's Cradle and Cabal Coffers. And meanwhile, they're just going to have a lot of lands. Or you'll have like an artifact that taps for three. So again, it's going to help you more than them. And your deck, it gives you just a little bit of an advantage, but that little bit of advantage adds up very quickly. The other thing you can do are there are cards like Cataclysm and Keldon Firebombers that are a little more friendly than Armageddon and Boombust. They don't completely knock people out of the game, but they shrink things down really, really quickly. And the nice thing is, especially with Cataclysm, is it's in white. So when you cast it and everybody gets one creature left, you'll have enough mana to use your one mana spot removal. And other colors just don't have that kind of spot removal. So you shrink everybody down to, you know, Blightsteel Colossuses, but you float a little bit of white mana and you can still path people out and get rid of those.
Would that
of
course, be Colossi?
You know, I'm not sure, but I don't think it matters. And of course, Firebombers is just one of the greatest cards out there. It's one of those ones, keeping people to three mana, that's like a magic number. That's pre-Wrath mana. It's the same thing as if you're playing something like Gaddock Teague and keeping people from playing the big spells. And those are all great. Just make sure you build your deck on a low curve and you add a bunch of effects like that, and you'll be amazed how well your deck runs against some of the decks that you've been having a lot of problems against. And then the last form is the form that is least common, but most crippling if you make the right meta decision. And that's something like Null Rod or Linvala. This is the opposite end of the spectrum of the Winter Orbs and Static Orbs. Linvala and Null Rod work very well if you're playing with lands for your ramp and you're not using any artifacts or creatures to make things go. And this shuts off their acceleration without shutting off yours. So you'll see there's kind of a trend here. One-sided shutting down for mana denial is obviously better than double-sided, because you don't need to build your deck as much around it. And it'll help overall for that. Now, as I was mentioning earlier, one of the biggest problems with mana denial for people is when to play it. And eventually, if you play enough and you get good, you're not going to need to be told these. Most of the experienced players, they already get this concept. But when do you play your Winter Orb and when do you play your Armageddon? Basic rule is you play them early. Same thing with like a Wheel of Fortune. A lot of people want to get maximum value. Mathematically, they want to kill the most lands, they want to shut down the most people, they want to wait for people to be tapped out to use a Winter Orb, or they want to wait until somebody has just cast Scapeshift to cast Armageddon. And you don't actually want to do that. People mulligan to keep their hands because they know they have lands and they know they can play things. So whenever you can do something that makes that decision seem worse, it's good. So when somebody kept a three land hand and after they play three lands, you destroy all three of those lands, they probably didn't keep four more lands thinking you would do that. You, on the other hand, kept a hand with Armageddon in it. So you know that's coming, and you can plan around it. You can be looking for that Crucible of Worlds or that Sun Titan. You can wait till the fifth turn and save a land and then play it and play the land. Anything like that. It just gives you such a big, big advantage when you know it's coming. I mean, this is the hurricane syndrome. The people who got out of the way of the hurricane are much better off than the people who forgot to turn on the radios and stayed inside. It's not a good idea to do that. The other time when you play these are when, later in the game, you're ahead. Anytime you're ahead. If you have a significant advantage, yeah, just go ahead. Take it out. Play that Armageddon. Do it. You don't want to give people hope for very long. If you have something that can win the game, use it to win the game. I mean, hope really isn't that good of a thing, no matter what the campaign slogans have said recently. When people get attached to an idea of a long game and things going on, and it's just going to be like fun, crazy interactions, but you have the way to win in your hand or on board, just take them out. You know, headshot them and start a new game. You have the win. It's insulting to other players to hold back your combo, to hold back your win because you want to be friendly. Just do it. And trust that they're good players and that they can either stop you or that the reasonable human beings are going to just be okay with playing another one. Now, the last time you can play this is kind of the emergency, you know, the red help button, that nuclear launch button. And that's when your opponents are reaching the critical mass of lands. And we're talking the monster Zoidberg level, the tooth and nail level, you know, and of course by Monster Zoidberg, it's the Maelstrom Wanderer. Whoop, 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 whoop. That guy who really gets annoying after a while. Once that guy hits that 9 mana, you've lost. You failed to prevent the worst from happening, and you knew it was going to happen. And you can play this kind of destruction just to keep him off the mana to cast his Zoidberg, or to keep somebody from casting Tooth and Nail to win. It's a valid strategy to do. You should do it. You don't want to lose while holding something that stops you from losing. So if you're wondering what decks play these, obviously, as I talked about earlier, Voltron decks love these. You know, you get your big Voltron guy out and you have, you know, a Static Orb, a Winter Orb going. It's going to be real hard for somebody to deal with your mega robot over and over again. It's played in non-land ramp strategies quite a bit. So if you're playing Rhys the Redeemed and it's an Elf Ball deck, you really don't need that many lands. Well, you can make sure they don't need that many lands either. It's also played in anything that depends solely on artifacts. We're talking the Sharums and the Arkham Dagson. Obviously, his most commonly known thing is destroying all permanents with the Nivineral's Disc. And the other thing he does is he plays Karn in the Mycosynth Lattice and just takes out lands. And obviously playing Wind Roar of them, etc. The more artifacts you play, the better these spells are. And yeah, I would suggest playing it. I would suggest giving people the benefit of the doubt. A lot of people online are whiny, try-hard spoil sports that don't want you to do good things. Go ahead and do good things. People in real life are much better sports about them. And play your Voltron Commander with a little bit of land destruction.
There you go, winners. That was Sean. This is Chris signing off. If you have any questions for the man himself, email us at seanisrightiamwrong@gmail.com.